And welcome to Talk of the Rock. I am your host, Jared Griffin. Today, we are talking about seabirds. In 2009, thousands of surf scoters washed ashore along the outer coast of Washington. In 2014, tens of thousands of Cassin's auklets littered beaches from Haida Gwaii in British Columbia south to Newport, Oregon. In 2015, hundreds of thousands of common murres were found from California all the way north up to the Gulf of Alaska. In 2016, thousands of rhinoceros auklets died in the Salish Sea. So is this normal? What can we do about it? And are we seeing seabirds washing up on Kodiak shore? So to help us talk about marine birds, seabirds, is our guest today, Jackie Lindsay, who is the Science Coordinator for Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team, also known as COAST. Jackie's calling in from Seattle. Welcome, Jackie.
Hi, Jared. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling in. And we haven't had a science-centric episode of Talk of the Rock in a while, so this is really good. So before we get into the specifics around seabird monitoring and how we're hoping to get Kodiak involved, let's get an eagle eye view of your organization. So, Jackie, what is COAST?
Yeah, COAST, and that's with two S's. What a convenient acronym for our program. We're a citizen science program which operates out of the University of Washington here in Seattle, but has a broad reach from the North Slope of Alaska all the way down, as you heard, to Humboldt and Mendocino counties in California. So we're on the Pacific coast with folks who go out, walk beaches, report on what they see, and they send in data to us month after month so that we're able to get a sense of what's going on out in the marine environment through the eyes of local community members all across the Pacific coastline.
Okay, and so what can we learn, or what can we hope to learn from finding dead birds?
Yeah, when you go out to the beach and you find a dead bird, and that is what we're asking folks to report on, you might think that you can't learn a lot. That bird is dead. It's maybe a pile of bones with some feathers on the beach, but dead birds are amazing because they can tell us so much about their life history just for any casual observer who might walk up to them. And my program actually helps to train those casual observers so they know what to report. But the really cool thing about a dead bird is that it's not going to fly away from you. It's going to let you walk right up and take a couple of pictures, which you might submit to my program along with your report. And because of those two things, you can actually, anyone can take an ID guide and figure out what type of bird you're seeing on the beach. And the fact that that bird is there, we can see if there's anything going on in the ecosystem that might have led to its demise, or if it being there is sort of part of a natural cycle of mortality. So maybe there's a marine heat wave, which means lots of birds are dying off unusually, or maybe it's the breeding season, so there's lots of chicks who are trying to survive, and not everyone makes it that year, and that's sort of a part of natural mortality. So we can tell cyclic changes going on in the ecosystem, and we can tell catastrophic events going on in the marine ecosystem, all from a couple of reports from individuals out walking their beaches and saying, hey, I saw a dead bird, and this is what it looked like.
So why birds? Why is the seabird monitoring important? I mean, are there other kinds of monitoring programs? Like, I don't know, we see washed up jellyfish up here, you know, all the time. What is it specifically about seabirds and what it is that they tell us about our ecosystem?
Yeah, seabirds are a great indicator species because they travel long distances and they operate in all sorts of different environments. So there are some that live near shore. There are some that travel across ocean basins. There are some that are ice associated and some that only live down in the tropics. So when you see a particular bird in your area, dead or alive, you know a little bit about what that bird is doing there just because of its presence. So we know that it's either finding food or not, maybe if it's dead on the beach. And we know that it's there maybe for breeding season, successful or not. And so these really great marine indicators are, they're traveling around collecting data, so to speak, and coming back to our shores. And they're also something that people enjoy looking at. So we know that when you're out on the beach walking, you're going to actually notice when you see a bird that's washed up. And if you happen to be a bird lover, you might even know which species it is, which is not necessarily true when you see one or two crabs wash up on shore. They're charismatic. Mm-hmm. That's part of the bird's charm. And they're charismatic, but they're still numerous. So unlike something like a whale, which does occasionally beach on a local shore, and there's usually news organizations who all come in and talk about it. Why is it here? What happened? Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen really regularly enough for us to tell really great stories. And that's not to say that nobody reports on those marine mammals and tells stories about them. They do. But for our purposes, to have citizen scientists out there creating sort of a baseline of information, how many birds usually die at what time of year, it's good to have birds wash in fairly regularly so you don't have to wait two decades to see a bird on your beach.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. They're easily observed, and they're also very incredibly sensitive to climate change and to coastal changes.
Yeah, these birds that we see on our beaches are just as sensitive as we are in some aspects, because sometimes they are actually consuming some of the food chain that we are also targeting as fish eaters in our communities. So when they're looking for the forage fish that feed those target species that our fishing boats go out for, if they're not finding them in a particular area because the climate isn't right for them, yeah, that's a huge indication that's really important for us as also top predators in the marine ecosystem.
Okay, so we've kind of established what seabird surveying is, why it's important, and so what are you planning to do here in Kodiak?
Yeah, we're planning to come our program out to Kodiak at the end of the month and host a presentation about what we do, as well as a workshop to train folks to go out and conduct beach bird surveys. And this isn't, we're not brand new to the Kodiak community or to Alaska in general. We've been coming out, I think our first training in Kodiak may have been in 2011. And so we do have folks who are currently monitoring beaches in Kodiak who go out there and walk once a month, report on any birds that they see, send in data sheets and photographs when they do. And they sometimes need help. And there are also a couple more beaches in Kodiak that could use surveyor coverage. So we're coming out, the executive director of the Coast Program, Julia Parrish, who some of you may have met if you're listening and you've seen Coast and Community before, will be coming out at the end of April to do that presentation for the community at large and also a training workshop for anyone who's interested in learning a little bit more about how they might be able to become a sentinel on their own beach for detecting those changes in the marine environment through the birds that are washing in.
Yeah, this is a weekend event. That's Friday, April 28th over at the Kodiak Marine and Seafood Science Center. Dr. Julia Parrish, yeah, we'll be talking about it. And then if you're so inspired, then you can come the next day, Saturday, April 29th. It's a six-hour-long training to learn how to collect the data and just be part of this this monitoring team. It does say that the surveys are best conducted in groups of two or more, so bring a friend.
Yeah, sometimes getting out on the beach as a solo activity is just what you want to do, but generally, for safety reasons, we suggest you maybe grab a buddy to walk a beach alone. and that six-hour event does have a little a lunch break in the middle as well, fortunately. We don't keep you in a chair for a full 6 hours.
So so when you go out to survey with your friend, just give us a rundown. What does that look like? What do we actually get to do?
Yeah, essentially, you get to have a lovely walk on a beach. If you don't find any birds, that's really what you're doing with your friend. And we'll assign anybody who's interested their own personal stretch of beach that they get to go out and monitor once a month. And so there's sort of a known area. You go out there, you have your backpack full of your sampling supplies, which includes a couple of measuring tools and some gloves in case you do find a bird, and some data sheets. And you take a walk along the beach looking back and forth on the ground to see if you can see any evidence of a dead bird. And when you do, then you actually stop, you get out your backpack, you record some information and take a few photos about the bird that you found. And you work through this custom ID guide that we've made for our dead bird surveyors. I said anybody can identify a dead bird because it's holding still right there on the beach for you. It's true. You can walk right up to it and take a couple measurements and work through our custom ID guide to figure out what you're looking at. You record that information on your data sheet, and then you keep walking along the beach till you get to your turnaround point. A lot of times people are doing this on a really gorgeous spring or summer day where there's lots of daylight, and usually we suggest that folks who are trying to survey in the stormier months of the year really keep safety in mind. So if it really is blowing wind and rain or your beaches have a bunch mm-hmm. of snow on them, we say safety first. The dead birds will still be there on a day when the weather's a little bit calmer. So that's what it looks like. You go out there, and generally it takes anywhere between 1 and 5 hours, depending on how many birds you find and if you've brought a partner along to help with any of that work when you do find a bird as well.
Mm-hmm. So,
and that's it. That's your day at the beach.
Day at the beach. There you go. Beach walking. So I started out this episode by, you know, giving some examples of some mass bird death events, mortality events. But for the most part, as people walk, they're not going to come across, you know, 1,000 dead birds, most likely. If they do find any, it will just be a few.
That's right. Yeah, we do have these MMEs, the mass mortality events that we've reported on in the past, which we're able to detect and report on because we have had birds reported on these beaches for more than a decade now. But generally, when you go out to your local Kodiak beach, you're going to be finding what we see as sort of average in the Gulf of Alaska, which is between 0 birds and 1 or 2 or 3 birds on that beach survey. So you're not out there kneeling in the sand identifying bird carcasses for hours and hours. And if you ever do happen to find more than a handful of birds on your beach, we actually have some protocols that'll help you group those birds together, snap a photo of everything, and send it in to us so we can help with that massive effort that would be reporting 100 or 1,000 birds on a single beach.
So let's get into kind of the theory or the philosophy around these beach walking and seabird monitoring events that you're asking for volunteers to come in. So asking volunteers to come in and do and collect scientific data is something you don't really hear a lot about. And so your organization, COAST, is really built on this idea of the citizen scientist. What is a citizen scientist?
A citizen scientist, yeah, is really what our program is built around. We would never be able to do what we do without the help of simply community members living near beaches and wanting to report what they see. So citizen science doesn't have anything to do with citizenship of a particular country. It has more to do with citizenship of the world, and it allows folks to take part in research that affects them and is about the place where they live and the things that they care about. So our program is an example of that. We train folks that 5 to 6 hour training window to come and report data in the same way, so that if you do see something, you're able to report it in the same way that I would if I was on that same beach on that same day. And then we have all those data come together to a central location, and we have researchers, experts in the field of bird identification in particular, take a look at those same data, and they're able to say, yep, I agree with those photos and those measurements. That bird that you found was definitely that species that you identified it as. And with that partnership between the local eyes and ears on beaches who are reporting what they see and some expertise back in the university setting where we pull all the data together, we're able to sort of work together and tell really important data stories that, I have to emphasize this, could not be told in any other way. Hmm. There is so much data that comes in from, we've got about 4,500 people that we've trained over the last couple of decades, and about 780 of them are currently surveying beaches. That number isn't something that I could ever hope to achieve, even if I was paid to travel nonstop every day all year to travel to these beaches. I just simply couldn't get out there and collect these data myself or even with a small team of researchers. So the reason that we involve volunteers, we involve citizen scientists, is two big reasons. One, we couldn't do it without the sort of power of all of those eyes, but we also wouldn't want to do it without the support of all of the local community members saying, yep, I care about this. We should continue looking into the reasons why we see birds on these beaches and helping to make sure that our marine ecosystems that we care about all together are healthy and can continue to support the wildlife and the environments that we care about.
Yeah, we were talking briefly before going on air. This is kind of built on this idea, which gets into social science of place attachment, that work really thrives under this idea of the people who actually live here, who actually might take more ownership or feel more connection to the environment of a place and its history and its ancestry. What's the connection there between that kind of social science idea and then this idea of just gathering hard data?
Yeah, science is lots of cool stuff for throughout human history, but one terrible thing that science tends to do is to come in and tell people who live somewhere that, you know, we as scientists know better than you because we've looked at the data. Mm-hmm. And that's just, it's harmful in so many ways, and it's also been proven to be incorrect in so many ways. When you come into a community and you don't know the place and you don't know the history, you can't possibly have all the answers. It's just not possible, even mm-hmm. if you've got a great computer and a great data set. So community science, citizen science programs like ours, take that to heart and put that at the front so that we make sure that we're not doing research without community involvement directly. And what we've found when we've tried to sort of optimize that to make sure that we are serving the populations that we are saying we're serving by going out there to do research with them, is that when you ask people, why do you go out and survey? Their real reason when it gets down to it isn't, you know, I love a good dead bird on a beach, although some people do. And I gotta say, I didn't know my career would be about dead birds on beaches, but here I am and I do really enjoy the work. But people say, you know, I love my beach. They'll refer to their beach they survey as their beach, even if it's not necessarily the one that they live on. It may be their ancestral home, or it may be the spot that they've adopted later in life as they retired near the ocean, or it may be the spot that is right next to where they parked their fishing boat in the marina, and they use these waters for recreation as well as livelihood. And those attachments, the I'm here because I love this place, or I love this community, or I care about the health of this water that I am standing near, those are what drive people to come back year after year, month after month, to conduct, you know, a survey on a beach to say that you saw three or four dead birds in a year. Mm-hmm. And that's really what ties us together. And I think that's when you talk to people at trainings, too, that's what ties us together, is that love of being on the ocean, about getting out to the beach and really witnessing changes yourself in your local environment to tie that into larger ecosystem mm-hmm. changes.
Let's talk about some of the places memorable or meaningful places that you've been to. You've organized dozens and dozens of communities, helping them get set up for surveys and then gone on surveys yourself. So, tell us, what was a meaningful or memorable survey that you went on?
Well, I actually have had the great fortune this last year to start working with and surveying with an intern in our program here at the University of Washington. She's an undergraduate now, who actually spent a lot of her formative childhood years on Kodiak, and she's been helping to plan this training in Kodiak at the end of the month to help us connect with folks and get posters out there. And she, as one of our senior interns, has actually gone out to the beaches with me here in Washington State this last year. And to walk the beaches with her and to help, part of one of my many jobs at Coast is to help our undergraduate interns learn about data sets and how to identify birds and how to help citizen scientists that call and email us to conduct their own research on their beaches. And having her experience with me sort of identifying a bird, taking the measurements that we train folks to do during the workshop, and then seeing her also pass that information on to the interns that she's mentoring right now, doing that on a beach with an undergraduate is simply fantastic. And it's amazing to me how much my experiences with her remind me of those sort of countless trainings that you mentioned where I get to go and help lifelong learners. So not necessarily 19 or 20-year-old students at a university, but folks who have retired in a community and are interested in continuing to support their community by reporting on environmental factors. So when I get to see that sort of that first moment where you go from, I'm not a birder, I'll never be able to identify this bird and understand what it is for myself, that'll be you. That'll be your job as the researcher. But there's a connection that happens when you start looking closely at your environment, including the marine birds. And I have to say, anybody can do it, and I've seen it so many times. There's sort of a spark that happens where maybe you're not a researcher, maybe you never wanted to be a scientist in your life, but you're really attached to your beach and your place. There's this connection that happens between us where we're partners in this program, where we are collecting data together and then telling large data stories about seabird mortality or regular day-to-day life of seabirds on beaches.
Hmm. So how, I mean, this sounds like such a fascinating and engaging project, but it's and could also be a model for so many other things. But I mean, what is what are like the next steps for Coast? I mean, and is this basically your bread and butter, or are there like additional programs or additional places that you kind of think you can take this citizen scientist community building data gathering model?
As a program, as Coast, we have taken directions from our community. So when we, about 5 years ago, started thinking about is there anything else we should be collecting data on mm-hmm. out in the marine environment, we did our own research, obviously. We're scientists at a university, so we can't help ourselves. We read a bunch of papers to answer questions. But then we know that we have this humanity resource that comes with being a citizen science program. So we turned it over to our participants and said, you're out on the beaches every day. Is there something else that you would really like us to help record in this sort of methodical way that can get results printed up in journals and get management agencies to sit up and take notice in a way that they might not if you simply, write, mm-hmm. write your local governor or something like that? And overwhelmingly, folks said, we want to tackle the issue of marine debris. Mm. So debris, if you're a beach walker in Kodiak, there's no way you can avoid it. You see trash wash up on your beaches that you know maybe didn't come even from Kodiak, that maybe came from shipping containers spilling or mm-hmm. from way far out fishing industry things washing back up on the beaches. And we have created a program now that is sort of in its infancy in Alaska, but is building steam in Washington and Oregon down here in the lower 48. To document systematically the debris that washes in on beaches as well, so that we can tell stories not only about birds that die off, but also about one of the things that we worry about for our seabirds, which is plastic ingestion. Mm-hmm. So if we see things washing up on beaches and we know that they are an entanglement risk or there's something that will break down and perhaps be consumed by a top trophic predator like a seabird, then that's something we were asked to develop by our participants and that we've put a lot of effort into over the last few years. Mm-hmm. So we're hoping to support that moving northward in the future. And certainly if Kodiak is interested in that kind of program, we would love to come back and do another training with that program in mind in particular for you all.
Oh, I think Kodiak would be extremely interested in that.
I think you're the right community.
Yeah, we collect marine debris and we turn it into art around here.
Yeah.
So, you do. I do want to ask this before about the survey in case anybody's interested or wondering about this. You mentioned safety when doing a survey, and just want to talk just give us a rundown of diseases. especially maybe it's more impactful in a mass mortality event. But how worried should we be if we're going out looking for dead birds about contracting diseases?
Yeah, it's a great question, and we have a section in our protocol that talks just about this, because it's a concern whenever you're interacting with live or dead animals that there might be a zoonotic disease, one that can transfer itself from an animal to a human and make you sick as well. So a couple of those main diseases are things like West Nile virus or avian influenza, both of which are not easily transmitted between a dead animal and a human, though it could theoretically be possible. So what we do on surveys is we wear gloves. We never handle the bird directly with our hands. You, of course, wash your hands after your survey. Some folks, I know everybody's got a mask in their back pocket or in their glove box mm-hmm. of their car these days, so wearing that isn't a bad idea, although it's not required for our surveys. And then making sure that you keep your survey gear separate from your, you know, day at the beach gear, so that you're not accidentally, you know, using a pencil that you used to write dead bird stuff down with for your taxes later on. Have we missed that date already? Later on this month. So those are some of the safety things that we keep in mind when we send folks out on the beach. But those kinds of cases, those transmission cases, are exceedingly rare. There's something we keep in mind, especially right now, as there's this highly pathogenic avian influenza strain making its rounds up and down our coastlines. Fortunately, we haven't seen really large impacts quite yet on this side of the country, at least, but we are keeping our eyes out for it. And if there's ever any change, that'll be an announcement that goes out to coasters first and foremost, just because we follow CDC guidelines as far as keeping y'all safe. If there's any change in pathogenic diseases that might transfer to humans, we would call off handling of birds before we tell you to go out on a survey. Safety first.
So we have about a minute and a half left. So give us your pitch for any potential coasters out there. How what are like the benefits that you've seen in other coasters, and tell us about those.
Yeah, our coasters. Our participant community really talks about the excuse to get out on a beach occasionally with a friend, or if you're a loner on your own. But those experiences going out to the beach, where you get to see the same area over and over and experience changes, noting them for yourself as you're out there, that sort of that gradual process of getting to know a place and that place attachment that we talked about mm-hmm. a minute ago, Jared, that sort of is the connection. And then there's an added bonus for folks who want to learn about a little bit more about their ecosystem, is that we give information about the birds that you may or may not be seeing, as well as some of the other critters that you might encounter on the beach. So to get out there on that regular basis is really, it's an experience that I often get to experience only through the eyes of our coasters, but I love to see the comments and the photos come in as you sort of see your world in a new way. Mm-hmm. And so if you're interested in hearing any more about that, I would suggest you come to the community presentation on the 28th and hear Julia talk more about our program and results, and then even more on the 29th of April. If you want to come to our workshop, we'd love to see you there.
Yeah, if you want to be a coaster or a citizen scientist, that's Saturday, April 29th at 10 a.m. over the Kodiak Seafood Marine Science Center, and it's a day-long training to go out with a friend or a family member and conduct some marine bird surveys. And the night before, Friday, April 28th at 6 o'clock, will be a presentation by Dr. Julia Parrish to learn more about seabird patterns and coast. Thanks again, Jackie, for joining me here on Talk of the Rock and talking about seabirds and this amazing opportunity for our community.
Thank you so much, Jared. I hope to hear from some of you soon.
I think it's going to be great. All right. Thanks again for listening to Talk of the Rock.